Meditate, let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurt and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach and what you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning.
Welcome to episode 6 of Davita's Let's Talk. I am your host, Davita. So today we have the honor. Many of you know I took a vacation and went to the ocean for a week just to kind of get a break and recoup. And so while I was there, my son and I were having a good conversation. So we decided that we were going to tape that conversation to the mic and have that be our episode for this podcast. So today, for this podcast, I'd like to introduce to you my son. His name's Andre Thomas, and we're going to talk about his experience as an African-American, a Black man in Puyallup. So welcome to the podcast, Andre. And so if you could just tell us a little bit about who you are.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm 21 years old. It's my mom. And I'm the oldest of 3 siblings. So, yeah. And I go to college. I'm in my senior year right now, my 4th year at college. I played basketball I started playing Oriole basketball when I was in 7th grade. Walked on my first year. But other than that, you know, still play basketball. And I study, right now I'm studying business. I switched it from exercise class to business because I'm trying to work on my own brand, my clothing brand.
So tell us a little bit about your clothing brand. What is your clothing brand that you're working on?
I made it in high school, me and some friends. Well, I came up with it and I kind of brought it to their attention. But my main clothing brand is called GFS, stands for God, Family, Success. It's like the 3 things in my life. The most important. I'm a very family-oriented person. You know, I want to be successful, and obviously, you know, God's been helping me and blessing me opportunities to get there. So I just kind of thought it'd be cool to put those 2 things together and do that. But mostly my brand, like, the way I came up with it is me and a lot of my friends. Anybody who's really close to me know that, like, I have deep conversations with some people. You know, I give good advice to a lot of people that ask me for it. And I just thought it'd be cool to kind of share that advice with other people through my clothing because, you know, most clothes, you get the same kind of normal quote, you know, work hard, just do it, no pain, no gain, like normal stuff like that. But you don't really get the more deeper stuff that's like, you know, life is not about the start or the finish, it's about the journey which you pick up on the way. Or, you know, is there anything that's more like kind of deeper in? Because, you know, like mental health is like a big thing around as well. And it kind of helps, or it kind of like especially impacts the younger youth like that, you know, through this choreograph, it kind of helps express some advice to those who may not know or may not be able to contact me.
All right. So, our main topic for today is talking about what it's like as a Black man living and growing up in Puyallup. So, from your perspective, just real quick, we'll go into a little more detail, but just can you just summarize what it was like as a Black man living in Puyallup, going to the school, having friends in the community? What was that like?
It was like, at times it was very lonely. At times it was, I don't want to say misunderstood, but it was like, in a sense, it was just kind of, how do I sum it up? Like, I don't know, it was hard for one. Like, I don't know how else, like, it was hard, very complicated, very mentally straining. And, like, emotionally straining, because it kind of, like, growing up in the city, the way it's kind of how it is, it makes you kind of question a lot of stuff, and then it kind of makes you also like really figure out like, are you okay with it? Kind of came down to the fact of like, if you want to, it was like a fear test. Okay, it was like a fear test. It was more like, okay, if you want to be comfortable being you, there's a high chance that there's a lot of people that are gonna like you,
mm-hmm.
and there's a high chance you're gonna be alone all the time. Or you can kind of just fall with the grain and follow like everybody else and try to do what everybody else does and get liked by many people who actually talk to you, at least. You know, go through high school somewhat feeling like, oh, I have some friends, but really, you know that the friends you have don't even really understand you or know who you are because you haven't really put your normal self out there.
So it sounds like what you're saying is there's this piece that, you know, growing up as a kid, there's always this challenge to fit in. There's always this piece of, you know, what crowd do I fit in? How do I fit in? Finding your identity in that. But then there's also this other layer of it where it's the racial layer about, you know, not only how do I fit in, but how do I fit in as a Black person in a white community? So you said, you know, I can choose to embrace my identity and not be accepted, or I can go ahead and do what everybody wants me to do and, you know, whatever it needs to try and make friends and be liked. But then there's that piece of what I heard you said was, are they liking me for me, or are they liking me as a token, or are they liking me as a fitting the box that they want you to fit in, but still not liking you as a Black person? Mm-hmm. Do I understand that right?
And also, this is also the fact of like, I wouldn't even say like just liking them as a token. Like for example, like when I was in high school, I'm very observant. I pay attention to like what people wear, what people do, what people say, all that stuff. And so when I was in high school, because I was so observant and kind of understood at how, you know, this group operates like this group operates like that. Even though I'm like, mind you, I have friends in any type of group you could think of, because I'm just a very like outgoing, understand. I don't really judge nobody for anything. But if I wanted to specifically go with this group, even though I know that what they were about, what they would do was totally not what I wanted to do, but they were the most, you know, talked about, the most, I guess you can say, popular, I was like, okay, I see that they do this, do that. I'm gonna try and implicate that into me as if that's something I do. You know, I know it's not something I do. But I was like, I'm gonna just kind of fake it until I can get, you know, accepted, so that way I can be like, at least have something.
But how does that play? Because I think of that, some of that is just natural.
Yeah.
Of just trying to fit in high school. And so how does that fit in the piece of being a Black male?
Well, for me, when I was doing it early on, before I really got comfortable with like being who I was more like, I just fell into the stereotype because I knew that was what mostly everybody, I was more the jokester always. I could always make people laugh. I was the outgoing, funny person. And I knew the best way to make them laugh is by feeding into the stereotypes that everybody already laughs about. So I was like, if this is what they think is funny, I'm going to just kind of feed into it and give them exactly what they think is funny. So that way, you know, I can feel more obligated to be like, instead of me feeling nervous walking by and be like, you know, I can't walk by and I can't talk around, blah, blah, blah. You know, I would go up to like, hey guys, blah, 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 this is that, and say something stereotypical, just get a laugh. And then on top of that, it was like also falls into a plan even after school. After school, I didn't go nowhere besides the gym at home or at practice. So I kind of was like, well, if I can get these kids to at least talk to me on a regular basis, then I might be able to have friends to actually hang out with after school. But I mean, it didn't really work out like that, but that was like kind of what I was thinking. It was like, if I could get this to kind of work, you know, I can go to these kids' houses. And my view is also like the financial statute too that played into, because the kids that I was trying to kick it with all the time were the kids that, you know, had the most money, had the fanciest cars, biggest houses. Everybody knew that. So I was like, well, you know, I'm not even remotely close to that just because of how my living situation was. So I was like, if I can at least go kick it with them, but I can, you know, somehow feel like I'm fitting in, I belong somewhere, you know, I don't have to feel alone all the time. And I mean, it didn't really play out like that because, you know, it didn't really happen like that for me at all, but that was kind of like what I was dealing with, was the fact that I was being alone, and so I had to kind of like lower myself to try and feel accepted, and it made it work.
And I hear you saying that not only did you lower, it's not even just lowering yourself.
Well, that's my
you opinion. Almost, no, you're right, Matt, but there was this other piece of almost internally destroying yourself for the sake of acceptance, or what seemed like acceptance of laughter from others, so you can feel like you were included in an environment that your identity wasn't represented. So you fell into the stereotype just to have some type of acceptance. Go ahead.
It got bad to the point where I started using the stuff that was like painful to me in my own life, and use that as something to joke about. Because I was like, after so long, you could say the same joke for so long until people start getting annoyed by it. So I was like, okay, I knew. It was like how a comedian comes up with new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I was kind of thinking about it. I was like, okay, I can't say this same stuff every time because it's not always funny. So I got to come up with something different. And I just remember, you know, there was stuff I was going through in my personal life. So I was like, if I can at least get them to laugh about it, make it easy for me to go through.
So I heard you say that, so when we're talking about the internal impact that, you know, this experience had, you talked about the emotional strain and the mental strain and all of that. To your knowledge, what were there long-term impacts to that you see the effects now? To where you were like, I know where this came from, but some of the struggles you had in high school being, I mean, there was what?
15
black people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it's 15 black people. I think it's like 15.
People of color?
Well, just minorities.
Oh, okay. Well, people of color.
Yeah.
So in this school that had, right. Ooh.
A lot.
Was that school almost 1,000 students or close to it?
Yeah, something like that.
Which I could be wrong. I don't know the exact number. But how, like you talked about those strains. Like, do you see that now that as you're becoming a man and growing to a man, you see some of the residual effect of that now? And as you're trying to navigate adult life, navigate college life, and how that impacted you?
I don't want to say not necessarily, just kind of how I am now, because I think like my senior year of high school played a big role in helping me, because that was like the first year where I was like, I could care less what people think. I'm black, I'm funny, I'm me, I'm right. That's what it is. And I have my little group of friends that kind of helped me build that confidence in myself. So it kind of like further along, I would say there was some stuff that I was, I guess there's one thing that kind of like really always stuck with me, was just like the fear of losing people, or the fear of being judged or not accepted by ones that you like care for, or being like misused by those. You know, like I
said something that made me think, not to interrupt you, but you said, because I'm mom. Well, I mean, everybody else, I'm mom. And shut up. but you've often sometimes said people misunderstanding you based on their stereotypical thoughts.
Oh, yeah. Like being, I'll say all the time, like, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I do say like I am misunderstood in the sense of like, how I think or how I operate and how I do things. And it's like, for some people, they're like, why do you do this? Why do you do that? But like, if I had an entire like blueprint of what I went through, you would understand why, you know, I try so hard to keep people in my life that I feel like you know, I really want to stay in line, you know. I mean, honestly, I've got to a point now where it's kind of, it's a little bit better to where it's like, you know, if it comes, it comes, it goes, it goes, you know, you got to go with the flow. But early my years, I didn't really know how to just go with the flow. So I was more like.
But why do you have to go with the flow?
It was
like that to me, I don't know, explain it to me, because what I'm hearing you say is like, why do you have to go with the flow? Why do you feel like you have to have people,
like go with the flow like this, an example of like how I used to operate was like, if there was somebody in my life that, you know, was a friend of mine and, you know, I felt like, you know, we were close, no matter what you did to me, mm-hmm. either I knew it might have been wrong, or even if we like, if something had happened that clearly you caused or it was your fault, I would still do my best to keep you in my life, knowing that, like, it was almost like a sense of like, I know you did wrong, but I'm gonna just be the bigger person to say sorry.
Well, even for example,
didn't do that.
Well, here's the thing. So here's an example to kind of sum up what we're getting at. I mean, we want to be careful that we're not going to use names in a negative way, but you talked about, you know, there were times where you dealt with racial bullying and racial harassment and people making racial jokes towards you, even though it hurt, you just accept it because you wanted to keep the friendship.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that?
So like, kind of like, I don't know if I kind of mentioned it earlier, but it was like the fact that like I knew stereotypes was the biggest thing I could get people to laugh or just even conversate with me. So I kind of feed into it and just give them more stereotypes to laugh about. And then like I knew it was bad. I knew it was wrong. But at the time, I wasn't really contemplating that. I was more just like, I'm in a new environment. I just moved. And,
but it wasn't new. You've been there like, since, well, like,
not, I wouldn't say new environment, but it was like, well, actually, it wasn't a new environment, but it still felt new to me because I didn't fit in.
That's deep. Okay. So I'm like, you were there from part of elementary school, you were in junior high, high school, so it wasn't new, but I see what you're saying. It wasn't new. Yeah. It felt constantly new because you felt like you didn't fit in that environment. Yeah. Okay.
And that makes sense. And the thing is, like, that's why, like, for, like, well, sports was, like, played a big role and still does, because sports is something I'm really good at. I love and kind of helps me with a lot of things. But that was one thing that kind of almost gave me a sense of, like, this is the one thing I have that can at least get me to feel like people, you know, like me or will talk to me or, like, somewhat appreciate me. Maybe they appreciate me for the wrong reasons, but I felt like at least they would appreciate it. Like, I would have parents come up to me after the games and give me compliments and stuff. And that's like parents I've never seen before. Or I had, you know, kids recognize me when I go pick up my sister from elementary school. I wouldn't even know who they are. But it's all because I played a sport that, you know, they watched. Or I played football where they all come and pack out the games. That was the only really identity that I had that I was, like, okay with. But other besides that, when I go back to school, if it wasn't Ray the football player or Ray the hardworking basketball player, I was just another black kid probably being harassed. And
so talk about the harassment. Talk about the bullying. Give examples without.
I mean, so like.
Give me names.
Well, like for example, like I remember there's one time we was in the gym and I was like talking to some friends, and I remember like I'm kind of sitting there having a conversation. My friends were like just laughing, and mind you, I didn't say anything funny. You know, kind of just like, what's so funny? And like, they're like, oh, nothing. They try to hide it. And I'm like, it looks like something's funny. Like, it looks like what's hilarious. And they kind of, you know, I was like, whatever. So I went back to the conversation again. They kept laughing. I was like, what is funny? And then I caught them looking at something behind me. And I turned around, and there was this kid all the way across the gym. And I'm like, he kind of like stopped real quick. And I was like, what is going on? And then, like, you know, I asked him, the kids on the ground, I was like, what's happening? I was like, I know he's doing something. What is he doing? And they're like, oh, he's making a bunch of monkey noises behind you. And I got mad because at the time, like, that was like, I was getting to a point where I was being angry, but I was able to, like, because I bottle a lot of stuff up all the time. Like, that's like the biggest thing I do that doesn't, it may feel like it helps, but ultimately it never does. So I was bottling up a lot of stuff, and that's where I got to a point where I was like, I was so angry about certain stuff like that, and also like just whatever was happening outside of school, that I just didn't really care about, you know, the consequences that would come, whatever action I felt like I should take at that moment. So I was like more on the anger side of like, okay, he does it again, I'm right across the gym.
But you never did anything.
Here's the thing. I just scared him.
You never got in trouble, or you never had a physical fight at school. So what that speaks to is you were constantly bawling, holding that in. As your mom, I didn't even know some of this stuff was happening until after graduation.
Mm-hmm.
So you walked around school from junior high through high school in really, it's not even more, it's not even a microaggression. It's almost a freaking micro assault. On a day-to-day basis, you gave this one example of where you're taking these things in, and at the time you had no outlet and no one to go to say, I'm dealing with this, and there'd be repercussions on the student that was doing that. Yeah, you see what I'm saying?
And the thing was, like, I also knew how my, you know, at the time my high school, like, the people in the office, I knew how they operated, in a sense of like, I knew in the back of my head, if someone says something racist to me and I hit them, or we got into it, I knew I'd be the first one to get in trouble for it.
But what if you went and told them? What if you went and told someone in the office?
I did.
But I'm just saying, what would happen, or what did happen, if you went and told someone in the office, this is what I encountered, how would they treat the situation?
Well, there was one situation. I had a kid come by me in the hallway, kind of shoulder by me, and then call me the N-word. So I was like, and at that time, I was still mad about stuff. So I got mad, but I was like, okay, you know, as much as I want to, you know, do something about it, I know what's the consequence. I know I'm going to be the first one to get the most of it. So instead of doing that, I was like, okay, I know my mom always like, you know, go to the office, you know, do it that route first. So I was like, okay, so I took it to the office. I told him, and the thing they told me when I told them who it was, they were like, oh, he has a bad family, or he has a bad upbringing. And so
that's an excuse, right?
Yeah, I know. And so nothing was ever done about it. And I remember I saw the kid like a couple weeks later. It was like nothing had ever really been done. I think they may have talked to him, but it was like that's they do it a lot to a lot of situations.
So a lot of talking, like,
it's
no.
A lot of talk and be like, pat on, slap on the wrist, don't do it again, but they're going to do it again.
And that's a thing that, as a community, I really feel like, especially in schools, we have to change our disciplinary system to be where these types of racial assaults are not taken lightly. Because what's happening is each one of these, we call them microaggressions, but I even think ones to this point are even more impactful, where you're having to constantly have these situations and no one is there to defend you. No one's there to hold the student accountable, of let them know what they are doing is wrong. And not just simply talking to them. There has to be disciplinary action, bottom line.
Yeah, and even like with some schools, you have like your group of people that you like. I want to say I didn't have people that would back me up in sense of like students wise. I did, but at the end of the day, it was like there's nothing we could have done.
But that's not on you guys. That's on the administration.
Yeah.
That's on the principal. That's on the vice principal. That's on the teachers. That's their job. And that's where it comes into systematic racism. That's their job as the adults, as the responsible parties, to not only cover and protect the white kids, but also completely cover and protect the students of color. And there should have been actions and accountability, disciplinary actions on that child for what they did.
And honestly, that might be, now I just thought of it, that also could be why like certain kids had, you know, gone a different route instead of like staying in school, because like after so long of getting bullied and teased and having zero protection, it kind of forces your hand to either continue to deal with that, even though you're not going to, or you take it in your own hands. And when you take it in your own hands, then you get discipline and you get the worst of punishments, and then eventually you get kicked out of school.
Or they just leave.
So yeah. It's like, at the end of the day, we don't have a choice. Either we say deal with it or we get forced out.
So with this piece, what I would say is, like, those listening to this podcast, is that is one thing that has to be done. As we are working with our school districts and as we're looking to change how we handle things, there has to be clear guidelines of disciplinary actions for any racial bullying, racial harassment. We have a whole anti-bullying curriculum that's out there, but there needs to be an anti-racist bullying disciplinary plan as well, because this is traumatic. This is constant trauma that children are having to take on, and no one is there to defend them. No one's there to have their back. And I would even say the same thing for we would do the same thing for sexual harassment. So why are we not doing it for racial harassment? So another piece that I want to go to was, you talked about being an athlete at this high school. And you talked about sports being your avenue, which you felt was acceptance. And so as your mom, and you know, we went through the whole, we still go through the whole academic thing, mm-hmm. fight with you. Hey, it's the truth. We keep it honest. We keep it 100 on here. So here's my piece. So, and I want to try and say this right. You talked about how you felt like if you weren't Ray the basketball player or Ray the football player, you weren't accepted and no one valued you. Do you feel like that played into your academics? Because me and you, we tussle a lot with academics.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
My academics, like, I guess, issue or struggle started all the way back in, like, seventh grade. Well, because, I mean, we had a conversation already, but, like, when I was in seventh grade, I remember, like, and this is when I first had, like, kind of, like, I want to say I first came about, but it was, like, kind of, like, a new start for me. And so when I came, I remember, you know, I was still kind of the same boat, not been accepted, no one really talked to me. I didn't, you know, I had friends here and there, but it was, like, nothing really genuine or whatnot. And I remember, you know, I was in math class, and I didn't, honestly, I'm terrible at math, you know. But I remember I was in math class, and I had raised my hand to answer a question, and it was, like, clearly wrong, but I remember my entire class just went on my head about it. Like, I was getting roasted about it. Even, like, the day after, I was going to sit about it. And then, like, it got to a point where I was like, from this point on, I'm never answering a question or never raising my hand for anything again. And so from seventh all the way up until I graduated, you would never see me raise my hand for anything. Like, you can probably ask any of my teachers. They'll tell you I was always just joking, but I would never answer a question.
So joking was your way to not feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, because it was like, it was so like, mind you, like, seventh grade, everything's, I want to say everything's new, but that's kind of like where you're still trying to, like, find yourself.
And that's one piece.
Yeah, that's
not including the racial piece.
Yeah, that's just one piece of it. But that had led to, like, somehow a lot of my academic struggles, because it was like, I could never feel that embarrassment, that fear, that. Like, and it was to a point where my teachers would kind of just let it happen. So I was like, okay, if my teachers came and stopped this from happening, and, you know, I don't really have too many friends that were actually backing up, like, what else can I do?
You know, so your teachers didn't affirm you?
Nah.
Your teachers allowed it to happen in class?
For the most part, yeah. Because it was like, it got to a point where, like, they allowed it for, like, maybe 5-10 minutes, and then they would kind of say something like, okay, bring it down, bring the tide right there. But then you still, like, because where I'm sitting, because most of the time I always sit, like, in the middle where some around people. So even when we're in class, I'll hear a little joke here and there get thrown at me in class. You know, teachers go, hey, be quiet, oh, sorry, but, you know, still more joking. And then as soon as class is over, that's when they got even worse. It's like, you know, hallways,
right.
Go to lunch, where everybody's together, and eventually it just kind of spread. But it was one of those things that it had messed me up so bad that I was like, I'm never doing that again. Even I remember when I was in junior high, I had one teacher that asked me a question because he knew, you know, I will never answer questions. I don't do nothing like that. I remember he specifically called me out and asked me a question because I used to joke in class. And I told him, instead of answering a question, you know, I was like, okay, this is my time to say something funny. But I'm like, okay, there's a bunch of white kids in my class. I can't really say something that would be like really funny to me because they probably won't get it. So I'm like, okay, let's just feed into the stereotype. So that's when I said like a stereotypical joke to him. And the teacher got mad at me, mm-hmm. but it was funny there.
But he wasn't. See. Well, we're out of time for this week's episode. I thank you all for joining us. As you can tell, the conversation began to get really deep. I will say, you know, it was a challenging conversation when we were at the beach on our family vacation for a while. And then as we came home and we decided to bring it to the podcast, more things began to unpack, and my son began to open up to share about his experience as a Black student in Puyallup. So join us next week as we go into part two of that conversation, and we continue to talk about what he experienced and how he's grown from that and what he's realized and what college life has looked like for him and just the different things of the process. And so I appreciate you all for hanging around and being patient while I took some time off and took a break and went to the ocean with my family and friends and had a great time. And been doing a lot of social justice work in our community, and there's a lot continuing to happen, and I really appreciate it. Puyallup is making moves and we're making changes, and we are moving toward the goal. So as I end this podcast every time, I pray blessings over you. I pray blessings over your family, and I pray that you have a fantastic week. Once again, thank you for sticking with me. And if you can take time to hit subscribe so you can stay updated on the podcasts that are happening. Thank you and have a fantastic night and the rest of the week.
Churches, Black churches, different people, same verses. It's kind of hard to fight with each other, laying down in the ground 600. At every show, I see my people, they ain't the same, but they're all equal. One love, one God, one family. You're missing every color if you're only seeing black. Thank God, thank God, thank God, thank God, thank God, thank God, thank God.